Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice on this beautiful Friday morning. Welcome to Morgan Murphy. Good morning and thanks for being here this morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Our CEO of Ackerley Advertising and the program person for The Morning Voice, Bill Ackerley, is with us as well. This morning we're, Matt, we gave it a great season, didn't we?
It's all over. Those darned refs.
Now I have a hard time. I really do have a hard time over the next couple of weeks to watch the rest of the games. It's just I have to really motivate myself to turn on the TV and watch these guys play. That especially,
I'm actually curious to see how Houston does. I think that they've got the potential to go all the way. And Duke looked pretty good last night.
Yeah.
But the Cats, they did give it everything they had. They gave it a good fight.
Yeah, that Love, man. Wow, that was a game, wasn't it? I don't know if that was his high, but that was pretty close.
It was a thriller. It was actually a good game to watch. And you know, you just saw a couple points where the Cats really were doing well, and you thought, man.
At the 14-minute mark, at the 7-minute mark, I thought, man, they are going to come back and take this thing.
So as good as Duke is, and they're very good, the Cats, you know, the Cats were not blown out of the game last night. It was a good-looking game. It was a good game to watch.
Right. Good game to watch, and great season, and Tommy Lloyd's a good guy, and I think we got a good coach in him. Hopefully he'll stick around for a while. Well, we're going to talk about success stories this morning, as we do on Friday mornings. On Monday, our good friend Lydia Ronda talks about rainmakers and education and women's issues and other things. General Ted Maxwell on Tuesday talks about engagement and politics a little bit. On Wednesday, Grant Kruger talks about food for thought. This coming Wednesday, our good friend Alan Kaith will be sitting in for Grant. And he sat in also this past Thursday for Tom Moulton, and Tom talks about Southern Arizona Traction, sponsored by Visit Tucson. And then on Fridays, we talk about business success stories, as well as our second hour is the Wonder Series, where we talk about the fantastic things going on at the University of Arizona. Well, there's something old in Tucson, but something new in Tucson combined together, something pretty exciting. We want to welcome Jeff Dunlap, who is the Community Development Manager for ICCU. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Ed.
Thank you for being here on The Morning Voice, and we want to give you a voice because we think that ICCU is an important development in the community. And so tell us what these acronyms, ICCU and TOPCU, mean. What are we talking about with ICCU and TOPCU?
ICCU, we are a credit union based in Idaho. We used to run our name as Idaho Central Credit Union. Mm-hmm. We've decided to drop the name and just be an acronym, ICCU.
Right.
And TOPCU, that's Tucson Old Pueblo Credit Union. So they're based here in Tucson. Right. And now we have merged with ICCU, has merged with the TOPCU.
Right. And actually, the irony of it is the ICCU is a little bigger than, in terms of assets, was a little bigger than TOPCU. So that does give TOPCU, Tucson Old Pueblo Credit Union, as it was known, it's been around since the 30s, gives it a little bit more clout in terms of investment power and stability and so forth. So this is a good for both. It lets ICCU expand into the southern market, but it also allows the members of TOPCU to be now have access to some more things, some exciting things to come. Correct.
Correct. Yeah, we have quite a bit of that connection and then with the technology and mm-hmm. offers the products and services. Yes.
Right. So I'm a member of Tucson Old Pueblo Credit Union / now ICCU. And I said to Eber the other day that I walked in, I asked him a question. I said, Eber, do you see me? And he looked at me and I said, well, ICCU. And so that's my standard joke that I do every time I go in to talk to a teller. I say, do you see me? ICCU. You know, as a member of a credit union, I know what the difference is. I'm also we have bank accounts at regular banks, but a credit union is something different, isn't it? It's similar, but it's different. It offers something that maybe you don't get at a bank, especially a huge, giant, megalopolis bank mm-hmm. out of New York or someplace. So what's the difference between a credit union and a bank?
Yeah, so a bank, you can think of it versus a credit union. We are member owned. Mm-hmm. We're our board of directors are volunteers.
Right.
So they...
They're not out to make a buck.
They're not out to make a buck. They're part of your local community. And then versus the, you know, the big banks, their board members are paid.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to make sure that everything is done to...
Right.
To make them a buck, like you said. Right. But with our board members, they're part of the community and they want to see what that the credit union is part of the community as well.
Right. And Tucson Old Pueblo Credit Union started in the 30s with a couple of firemen and a couple of city employees getting together. And back at the time when credit unions were being formed around that time, for instance, in Tucson here, we have some examples. We have Hughes Federal Credit Union, which was formed because of Hughes Raytheon, now called RTX. Those employees formed a credit union. There's what's called Vantage West now, was originally DM Federal Credit Union, which was Davis Monthan's employees from Davis Monthan. Civilian Corps created that. And so there's other examples of Arizona State Federal Credit Union, which is now called something else, but they were started with state employees, including university and ASU and NAU members. And so credit unions were formed by groups, organizations of employees who wanted that local control of their dollars and that local governance of the money. So that's kind of a little different than a bank, which is maybe controlled out of a headquarters in another city.
For sure. Yep, we're a financial cooperative.
Right. And you do work with the other, you know, we had about 6 months ago, maybe 3 months ago, Matt, I can't remember when it was, we had all the credit unions here for credit union, all the credit unions that were represented in Southern Arizona came in and we had a nice little chat. It must have been Credit Union Month or something like that. And it was great to talk to all of them about what they do, the services that they provide, which are, and if you're like me, and quite frankly, Jeff, most of our listeners are in my boat, is we like to go into the bank and talk to the teller. We're not necessarily those types of people that like to punch it all in a ATM inside a Circle K and call that banking. So we like the service. So tell us a little bit about ICCU, based in Pocatello, Idaho, right?
Correct, yep. We're based up in southern Idaho, but we have expanded over the years. We started out in 1940, so just a couple years after Tucson El Pueblo started. And we have grown quite a bit over the last few years. So
right.
When I started 13 years ago, we were around 18 branches, and now we have over 60 branches. We're in a couple of different states as well. So
that's one of the exciting things that I when talking to the folks at the branch on the east side, that I really am looking forward to is to increasing the number of locations of the credit union. Again, I'm a type of person that likes to walk inside and talk to people and have that interaction. And so it's going to be nice to have a couple more locations. You haven't announced where those are yet, but I heard there are some, not quite a few, but a couple coming online.
So. We are definitely exploring the idea, yes.
Right,
yes.
Right, yeah. And then, you know, it's going to take, the transition, by the way, has been rather smooth. It's interesting. We've already seen the change of the logos and the signs and everything at the 22nd Street branch, and that's starting to happen over at the East Side branch now too. So it's kind of a process, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's a process. So the merger, everything started on February 1st. It was the legal day, right? So
right.
We Tucson El Pueblo Credit Union became ICCU.
Right.
So on the outside, you can see that it's ICCU.
Right.
But internally, it's still TOPCU.
Right.
For that transition takes a little time. Yeah. So we're hoping that that transition will...
Is it about 6 months?
A little less. About September. We're hoping that everything will be completely changed over in September.
So we'll go from purple and gold to green and
to
white.
To green.
Yeah, to green to make that beautiful. Well, that's great. And so the headquarters is located at 22nd Street and 22nd Street and Tucson Boulevard is where the main branch of TOPCU is right now. And that'll probably stay as the headquarters for the southern region for now, right?
As far as I know, yes, yeah.
Right. That's where you work out of,
that's
right?
That's where I will be out of, yeah.
And I always know where you are. I can, I, we, Morgan was laughing at when we drove up. Jeff drives a truck that is wrapped in green, and if you see it, you know that he is working for ICCU. It's a beautiful truck.
Thank you.
But I saw you the other day at the branch. You didn't see me, but I saw you, and I said, I bet he's the brand new marketing guy because he's got a truck with ICCU all over. It's a beautiful truck.
Thank you. Yes, please wave every time you see me.
I will. Okay, we're going to come back in just a minute and talk about what your plans are for coming up with the community and how ICCU is going to dovetail with TOPCU members and just have a great positive thing. What a success story to talk about TOPCU, which has been a great credit union in the marketplace for, goodness gracious, almost 100 years now. And what that means as a merger takes place in the second century. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI 1030 AM, and you're listening to Business Success Stories. We'll be back after a couple of wonderful sponsors tell us some good things about Tucson. I'd like some money. That would be great. How about you, Morgan? You want some money?
It'd be nice.
Well, you're going to be a graduate of the U of A Master of Marketing program here. And
a marketing kingpin.
And a marketing kingpin as the CEO of Ackerley Advertising. You're going to make a lot of money. I got to tell you that. You're going to make a lot of money. Hey, we're talking with Jeff Dunlap, who's the Community Development Manager of ICCU, the brand new, I will say brand new, 100-year-old credit union in Tucson. Welcome back, Jeff.
Thank you. Well, thanks for having me.
Yes. So ICCU, you know, if you're a member like I am and Bill is of Tucson Old Pueblo Credit Union, you might ask yourself, hey, this new ICCU is coming in. They're emerging and things are changing. The signs are different. The purple's changed to green. People are the same. How does that individual member be? How are they affected by this merger?
That's a good question. You know, like, We want the members to have the same experience with the staff that they've gotten used to, but we want them to understand that they the products and the services will get expanded and enhanced. The TOPCU that name will phase out,
mm-hmm.
but we're committed to maintaining that local presence and expanding the relationships. Having the increased technology, better the services and the products is going to out of this world. So yeah,
right. And what's important, I think, is that at least in my case, there have been a few new faces that have popped up in the branches, but we still have the same familiar people that have been there are still there. And I work with Eber on the east side mostly, and he's great. And I actually was talking with him personally about it. How's this affect you? And he said, oh, it's fantastic. You know, and he was just elated that he's the branch manager over there. And he may not have to work the line every day because he's got some help now, which is
yeah, we love Eber. He's been great.
Yeah, he's fantastic. What's the future look like then? We're not today announcing that there's going to be 60 locations in southern Idaho, like you said about ICCU did up there after you started. But there is obviously, if the two are merging and there's been a discussion amongst the boards as to how we're going to merge and how we're going to do governance on this, one of the areas is obviously expansion and how we can serve where you live up in the northwest in Marana, Oro Valley. How can you serve out in Vail? How can you serve out in northeast Tucson and down in the southwest quadrant and maybe even as far as Green Valley? How do you cover those with the services that at one time, you know, when you think about Tucson Old Pueblo Credit Union, it was really for close to downtown. There was a location in the downtown district, and it was obviously for firefighters and people that worked in the city right there in the core of downtown. Well, now it's a full citywide credit union, region-wide credit union. And so what's the outlook look for? What has the discussion been about future expansion, future growth?
Yeah, so when I mentioned we have 60 branches, we've got about 60 branches across all of Idaho, a couple down here. We mm-hmm. have some in Washington as well.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the expansion down here, we definitely are exploring the ideas of where to throw in an extra branch here and there, because right. we want to We want that convenience.
Would some of them be shared? Like, you know, there for a while there was quite a trend to be in supermarkets and, mm-hmm. and other places. Is that could be an option maybe? But or standalone is pretty much what they are up in Idaho.
All of them are standalone now. We have some in, we used to have some in some stores and right. grocery stores, but they, not anymore. We mm-hmm. have, most all of them are standalone mm-hmm. buildings. But we, you know, your closest branch is in your pocket.
Right.
So you can do everything with your, yep. Almost everything with your phone. Even yesterday I was able to, order a new debit card through video chat, through the app. I'm buying a house, I had to pay a wire to right. for my earnest money. Just pulled up my phone. I was able to do a wire real quick through video chat. So
it's pretty sophisticated.
It's pretty rad how we've yeah. come so far with the technology.
Yeah, but that's your technology challenged. I'm not technology challenged. I am time challenged. Is my problem. I am time challenged, and so. It sounds counterintuitive, but I like to go into a branch and talk to somebody because of the fact that I honestly, it sounds like I'm speaking vermin here, but I don't have time to pull out my phone and dial something up and walk through it. I want to walk in, hand something to somebody and say, can you help me do this? Mm-hmm. And boom, it's done. So that's me. I don't know what how you do. Are you a people person, or you're so darn young, you probably invented the app that all institutions are using.
I love apps, but I also think there's a lot of value to brick and mortar. I mean, just being able to get help. I mean, nobody likes sitting on a customer service line all day. I'd rather just walk inside.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't even mind standing in line for two or three or four customers to get that. Online, I do, if you know you're on the phone for a long time. So that's why I like the personal service. And that's what been the thing that has set TCOPU apart, Tucson OTOPCU apart from other things is this personal service, which is awesome and great. ICCU brings some infrastructure, especially technology, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind Correct. Of the big thing that's coming is this new technology.
Yeah, we pride ourselves in being very tech focused. So mm-hmm. yes,
and as you know, we develop more and more into less and less paper and more digital. It's important that that be correct and
safe.
Safe.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, that's members want to know that their money is safe.
Right.
So they want to know that they have access to their money, and they want to know that their money is safe.
Right. Right. So you're new to Tucson. You got to come down and look around, and you've chosen an area of town. You decided to move in up in the Marana area, and that's still like driving from Pocatello to Tucson Old Public Credit Union. From Marana is a long ways away from 22nd, and takes you probably about 30 minutes to get to work, huh?
Yeah. 30 minutes isn't bad, though. That's yeah. about what I did in the Boise area.
Oh, really? Really? What do you like about Tucson?
Ah, Tucson is gorgeous. It's just absolutely gorgeous. One of the things we fell in love with are the silhouettes. Mm. Every sunrise, every sunset, you have all the mountains all the way around us. And yeah. Just seeing those silhouettes is just, I frequent Tumamuk so that I can see right. as much of the valley as I can. And the, right. but food, I mean, I didn't get this belly without eating a lot. So yeah. I am
City of Gastronomy.
City yeah. of Gastronomy, and I'm doing my best to meet everybody. So
that's great. That's great. You know, our Wednesday host Grant Kruger is a restaurateur. He owns Union Public House and. Facility. And,
I have been to Union a couple of times.
Yeah, yeah. And Tom, on Thursday, we feature a lot of restaurants on this program because it's such a vital part of what we do, tourism and just the health and well-being of our community. It's fantastic. You know, when you talk about the beautiful sunsets and sunrises and so forth, I told you early on that my folks spent a couple of years in Idaho Falls, Idaho. My dad was running KID in Idaho Falls, and then they went on to Nebraska. And when they got, when Bill was born in Nebraska, he was the last of them to be born in Nebraska. And then they came to Tucson. And thank God they kept having kids because I'm the last one. And I was born here in Tucson. But my mom used to tell the story about coming over the hill and seeing the valley like you were talking about and just falling in love with it and saying, I'm never leaving here. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an interesting thing. That's when I ran for mayor, lots of people would come up to me and tell me how much they love Tucson and why they love it. And even in these 96 degree days, it's still a beautiful place, especially those sunsets are amazing.
Yeah, can't beat it.
Yeah. So we're gonna have ICCU be a community partner. Your job is community development, so you're going to sponsor the Coaches for Charity Bowl-a-thon in June. That's very nice of you. Appreciate you buying.
Just throwing it out there.
Appreciate ICCU being our first sponsor for the Bowl-a-thon. Roman Campuzano would love me throwing that in there like that was actually true. That's not true, and you don't have to sponsor Elaine, but if you'd like to, Bill has the information. And so as you get in, you know, your job is to develop the community, and to TOPCU has done a great job of having a presence in Tucson, and lots of people know about it and so forth, but even more people are going to know about ICCU. So what's the day in the life of a community development guy? What's your job?
You know, that every day is different. It changes all the time. So that's the beautiful part. I put on my green polo and I get in the big green truck and I start driving through. Hopefully there's an event, and we like to be at every event in town. So
I'm waving the bowl-a-thon at you.
I've been known to bowl a strike and follow it up with a nice gutter ball. So,
yeah, yeah. I usually follow mine up with a big old tall glass of beer.
That would be fun too.
Yeah, yeah.
We've already participated in the Tucson Rodeo Parade.
Oh, great!
That was incredible.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh,
world's longest non-mechanized parade.
I don't think I've ever seen so many horses in one spot in my life. Yeah. And I grew up in small town Idaho.
Right.
But yeah, we've committed to investing $1 million over the next 5 years into the community.
Right.
To different charitable organizations throughout all of Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to be everywhere.
Morgan, make a list of the 6 charities that we have that we need help from ICCU and pass that off to him before he leaves. Jeff Dunlap, the Community Development Manager of ICCU. ICCU used to stand for Idaho Central Credit Union, now stands for Tucson, and great green pastures ahead. It's going to be great to have you in Tucson and have you guys working to make Tucson the great place that it is. So shout out to you and to all the people that are new to Tucson that came down from Idaho, but also you're now Tucsonan, so welcome to the old Pueblo.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Anything exciting that you're going to do this weekend, or any community development stuff that's coming up? Or
look for us at Cyclovia.
Oh, Cyclovia. Yeah.
Yeah. So April 6th, right. We will have. I'll have my green machine out. So if you came to the St. Patrick's Day parade a couple of weeks
that
ago,
was you.
You saw the our van out with
That's
the music, perfect. With the lights.
That's great.
So we're going to be at Cyclovia. We'll have a full booth.
Correct.
Everything will be great.
It's ICCU 22nd and Tucson, or Eastside at Harrison and
Broadway.
Yeah, ICCU. Welcome, Jeff, to Tucson, and thank you for being here this morning.
Thanks for having me, Ed.
Business success stories on The Morning Voice. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. Good morning, Morgan Murphy. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Great, great. And of course, we also have Brother Bill here, who's working with us this morning on lots of things. We want to talk about a couple of things. First off, it is so great to hear people talk about how wonderful Tucson is. It was nice to have Jeff Dunlap, who's in from Idaho, buying a house here and starting his career here at ICCU. It's nice to have people like him say why they've fallen in love with Tucson. And that's one of the things that is the bedrock of The Morning Voice. Is when we started this back with Jump in Tucson and now changed to The Morning Voice, it was all about, let's talk about the good things that are happening in Tucson. We can all talk about how terrible everything is, and that's great. And we need to call people out and hold people accountable, especially our government officials, and even businesses need to be held accountable. And us as private citizens need to be held accountable for our own actions and take responsibility. But we can also talk about the great things that are going on in Tucson, and that's one of the things we do on The Morning Voice. So, Morgan, if you have been working for the last several months, you've been putting on a lot of time booking guests on Jump in Tucson, and now for The Morning Voice.
Yes.
How would someone who's interested in being on The Morning Voice, how would they get involved?
Well, we have a website, themorningvoicetucson.com. And then we also have a Facebook and Instagram, just The Morning Voice Tucson as well. And then you can go ahead and email me or Ed, Morgan@AckerleyAdvertising.com or Ed@AckerleyAdvertising.com. So there's a lot of ways you can reach us, and then we can go ahead and get you set up. It's a really awesome process. It's a great way to advertise your business.
Right. We do business success stories where we talk about businesses that have been around for a long time. Like, we've talked about the businesses that have been here for many, many years. But then we've also talked about places like ICCU that are just coming into town and having that immediate success of becoming a credit union here in Tucson. We also, though, talk to many organizations that are doing things that are powerful. So those of you that have listened for a while know that Bill and I and Janet Hare and others started Coaches for Charity about 16 years ago now. And it's a high school, elementary, middle school charity, raises money for scholarships and sports equipment and so forth. So, Bill, one of the events we have coming up is the Ebolathon, and that's coming up in June, correct?
Right. It's scheduled for Saturday, June 14th at Lucky Strike Bowl over on Speedway. And, we're in the planning stages right now. And I guess that's a euphemism for we don't have any sponsors yet.
Well, we're just getting started, and I made a big pitch to Jeff Dunlap to see whether or not ICCU would be a sponsor. But
like in the movie, always be closing.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, why a Ebolathon, and what's it for, and why Coaches for Charity, and what is this all about?
Well, as our listeners probably know, Coaches for Charity was started by you and Janet Hare, and I came along and helped with some of the production aspects, but I had an idea that I wanted to do, come up with an event that you and Janet wouldn't have to put so much time into, that would be more turnkey for the president and vice president. So I came up with the idea of a Ebolathon, and I asked another volunteer of the organization, J.J. Delgado Lopez, if he wanted to help, and he came up with the idea, yeah, let's do a Ebolathon, but let's have the money go to elementary schools in Tucson to help buy sports equipment. And so this will be our fourth annual Ebolathon. I can't believe it's gone by so quick. It seems like just yesterday. But over the years, we've raised money for Whitmore Elementary, Manzo Elementary, and Gale last year. And this year, it's going to be Maxwell, which is located over there on 22nd Street.
And they all get, after all is said and done, they get almost $3,000. And that doesn't sound like a lot necessarily to some people, but when they can buy some balls and some bats and some orange cones and maybe a couple of shirts and so forth to some of these schools, this is big time.
And the coaches, the guys, that men and women that step up to be coaches for these elementary and middle school teams are really unsung heroes, because not only do they put in the time, it's all volunteer, they put in the time, but many times it's their own money that's going to pay for the jerseys, so that every kid has a jersey with a number on it and that kind of a thing. So this can really help a program out to get a little extra money for the school.
That's great. So what we're looking for, a couple of things. We're looking for bowlers, people that would like to get a little team of six people, and they can reserve a lane and pay for that. It's $250, right?
Right, $250 for a lane, and it's 2 hours of bowling. But along with that, we have prizes. It's not really a competitive bowling bowl-a-thon. I mean, you don't have to be a great bowler
to
play.
It's more of a fundraising event.
Right, yeah. And for that price, you get pizza and soda pop free. So it's a lot of fun. We start at 10 o'clock in the morning and go till noon, and so it's a great way on a Saturday that we... the way we remember it is it's always Father's Day weekend. So
right.
Father's Day is on Sunday. So the Saturday before you can come out and
so bring support. Dad on out and play some, have some bowling right. with him and let him have some fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This year I came up with an idea. I'll run it by you guys. If you think it's a good idea, I thought of pick up a spare, and I'm going to call it that. And so instead of having to come up with $250 for six people, I've had a couple of people that say, yeah, I'd like to come, but I can't get together three other people to come with me. So I'm gonna put a little butter on the website where you can come by yourself for like $39.99 and bowl and be paired with other people that are single.
That's not a bad idea. Yeah. See, we metamorphose over time, so Morgan. It's all this education you're getting at the U of A that's come up with these great marketing ideas that you have. So the other thing that we're looking for all the time with Coaches for Charity, I was just talking to Jeff Dunlap from ICCU about how there are more charities in Southern Arizona than there are people. it's amazing how many charities there are. They say that per capita we have the most in the nation in our little community here. And that's good because that means the community has stepped up and filled in the holes of the needs of the community and so forth. But what that also means is that we all have our tin cup out and we're always begging the same people over and over again for help and to help us. What's nice about Coaches for Charity is granted some of the regular normal players are helping us. But it's nice to have individuals step up and give sponsorships. And it's also, you know, you may not be a bowler, but you still might want to contribute a few pesos for some sports equipment for a little Maxwell Elementary School. And so you send in a check for $20, $30, $40, $50, $100. And
right.
We add it to the till. And then what we're also looking for is sponsors. So companies, it's a great way. I was talking to, you know, like a credit union. It's a great way to get six of your employees to come out or buy two lanes and get 12 of your employees to come out and have a little fun event on a Saturday morning, build a little team building exercise, and then do something that's positive for the community. So, so we're looking for sponsors. The other thing we're looking for is prizes, right?
Right. We do have a silent auction. It's part of the event, and that usually raises a couple thousand.
Yeah, it's usually where most of the money comes from is the
silent auction. Yeah. And we've had a lot of people over the years help us out with hotel rooms and restaurant gift cards and
artwork.
I'm going to mention one of our clients, Cinderella C.
Right.
She always gives a very nice accessory, a purse or something like that. And,
right.
It really helps.
And so during the bowl-a-thon, you can bid on some items and take them home with you. And there's a 50-50 drawing to raise some additional funds.
Right.
So, you reserve about 15 lanes. And so it could be as many as, 70, 80, 90, 100 people participating in the bowl-a-thon. It's quick and to the point, and it's easy. Like Bill said, it's turnkey, and it's fun and exciting. And we'll be announcing at this coming bowl-a-thon, the CEO of Ackerley Advertising has got the high score. She's going to get a 300, aren't you?
I was terrible at bowling last time.
Yeah.
Plus, that was bad. That was really, it was laughable. It was rough.
I made a mistake. I thought that in bowling you were supposed to get the low score, and in golf you were supposed to get the high score. So I am terrible at bowling. I am absolutely terrible.
If I could bring my golf skills to bowling, I'd be a champion.
Yeah, exactly. And then you see these little kids in the lane next to you.
Of course, bowling balls do a lot more damage when they go off course.
It's been crazy. Well, we'll take a break when we come back. I do want to, Morgan, talk just a little bit more about advertising on the Morning Voice and your future. Because you're going to head out here before too long, and we want to see if we can catch you hook, line, and sinker and keep you here in Tucson and keep you doing the good work that you're doing here for our clients. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. We will be back after the break.
Again, that bowl-a-thon coming up, it's June. Where did I last have it right? June 14th, Saturday, 10 to noon, and go to coachesforcharity.org to learn more about it. Morning Voice will be right back.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. A shout out to my good friend Roman Campuzano, who just sent us a note and said he would sponsor a lane at the bowl-a-thon. Thank you, Roman. We appreciate that. We also want to give a shout out to our very good friend, Jesse Lugo, who is thrown his hat in the ring. We have a very good mutual friend by the name of Richard Fimbres, who has been on the Pima Community College board, the governing board for years he was there. He's a former DPS officer and has been a longtime city council member, announced his retirement. And so we wish him the best as he moves into his retirement. And so that seat is opening up, and our good friend Jesse Lugo will be has thrown his hat into the ring, has gotten his signatures all buttoned up and ready to go. And so we're going to help co-host a little event for him on Monday night, this coming Monday, Grant Kruger's Place, Union Public House on the patio. We will have a couple of people there. Sixto Molina, who was my campaign chair, will give a short presentation. F. Ann Rodriguez, who is the former Pima County recorder and good friend of Jesse's for many, many years, will be there to talk about what Jesse has contributed to our community. And then we have a firefighter, EMT paramedic, which will be there, Mr. Fitzpatrick. He has also known Jesse for a long time and known what the contributions Jesse has brought to the community. And I will be there, and Grant will be there. We're just so excited that Jesse has thrown his hat into the ring, and he's going to give it a shot. And we wish him the best of luck, and we're going to do what we can. When I was running for mayor, Jesse was one of the most stalwart volunteers that I had. He would appear at every event for me and help me immensely in my run for mayor both times. And although we were unsuccessful, we forged a great friendship, and I will do everything I can to see him get into the city council. Jesse focuses on core services, talking about police, fire, parks, roads, water, all those important things that those of us who live in this community count on. So important things that the government needs to be doing for us. And we really want to, we're hoping that Jesse can make it happen, because he would be an excellent city council member. So that's Monday night at 5:30 at Union Public House. We're encouraging anybody that wants to come and be part of that. And hear what Jesse has to say about his run for city council. So I'll be there. Morgan, you going to be there?
I'll be there.
Great. Bill, you going to try and be there?
Oh, yeah. I'll bring my camera.
Great. We'll be there with bells on. So if you'd like to join us and come out and see Jesse, and obviously he's going to be asking for a little, it takes money to run a campaign, so there'll be some envelopes there if you want to donate to his campaign. Speaking of money, it takes a little bit of money to run a show like, you know, you're so exorbitantly paid, Morgan Murphy. We have, you know, we have to go get the bags of gold to pay you every week. So advertising is important. Bill and I have been in a family that's been advertising with companies, helping people advertise for 58 years now. On May 1st, we'll be 58 years old. It's amazing that that's coming up around the corner. Bill and I have been in the business, both of us, we were just talking about this, 50 years. Both of us have been plugging away in this business, and that's a long time to be doing something. But we know that advertising pays, and one of the ways that this show is stays on the air, we pay the bills by advertisers. So, Morgan, how does someone? Why would someone want to advertise on The Morning Voice? Why would, if you had a company and or you were a listener, but if you were a company, and even if you didn't listen, and why would someone want to buy some spots on some radio commercials on The Morning Voice?
I always say you can have the best product or service in the world, but if nobody knows about it, it does no good.
Right.
So, and our...
You had good teachers in your marketing
I
program.
I do.
Yeah.
Our segment's all local, and so that's something that's really hard to find lately, especially with how media is and how media is currently. You know, everything is national, but Tucson runs on local, and right. So it's hard to find something that still does that. So our station, our segment, does a really good job of reaching local people and local businesses and helping create connections in that way.
And we have the opportunity for you to do a couple of things, which are neat. You have the Facebook page and the Instagram, and we're moving into that digital space every week. We do a little bit better on that.
Yeah, invite people to like and follow The Morning Voice on Facebook, you bet.
Right, and that really helps with exposure. We also have the opportunity, just like just like we did this morning with Jeff Dunlap from ICCU and other people, they can come in and have a half-hour interview and talk about their business or organization. That's a big value. And they can get a recording of that, and then they get to use that wherever they want to in their own promotion and podcasts and so forth. And the podcasts are up every day for you to tap into. So whether it be Lydia, Ted, Grant, Tom, or me, you can take those podcasts and use them as you would want to. And then we also have the eat and greets. So if you have a restaurant, a bar, an organization, a place that would fit, it doesn't have to be a restaurant per se. We can do an eat and greet at a nonprofit organization if they want to put out a little spread and have the hosts come by and say hi and talk to people, listeners, about what they have. This is a great opportunity. And but buying spots in our program is the lifeblood of any radio program, TV program, anything that where we disseminate information. We've accepted in our country that advertising pays the bill. So we watched the U of A basketball game last night, and the way that the U of A basketball team is really funded overall is sponsorships, advertising and sponsorships. Ticket sales help, and other things help, contributions from state and so forth. But really what really runs the engine for most organizations is sponsorships, advertising, and so forth. So if someone wanted to advertise, they should contact Morgan at morgan@ackerleyadvertising.com or contact me. Go on the website, right?
Yes, or go like our Facebook page. I just put our Facebook page up, and you can actually message us on there, and you can keep up with when we do have an eat and greet if you would like to attend.
Right. Next one's going to be at Proof next to Union there in St. Phillips Plaza. That will be with Grant's group. We'll do that in April. We'll get that Thursday for you coming up soon. It'll be one of the Thursdays in April. We'll be back after the break with Wonder, the good things happening at the University of Arizona. Thanks for supporting The Morning Voice. If you'd like to get some advertising going, give us a call. And if you'd like to be on the show, give us a shout as well. We'll get you set up. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. Good morning and welcome to Friday, The Morning Voice. This is the Wonder Edition, where we talk about wonderful things happening at the University of Arizona. It is appropriate that we say that our new president, Garamella, was installed this past week, and a very formal, as we do in academia, do a very formal installation. It was wonderful. Lasted about 3.5 hours at Centennial Hall. It was fantastic. And welcome to, he's been here for 6 months, but welcome to President Garamella, the official next president or current president of the University of Arizona. That was a great ceremony, and it's great to have him leading the charge. We also want to say congrats to our U of A Wildcat men's basketball team that had a great game last night against Duke. They came awfully close a couple of times to making it happen, but they had a great season, and they've got a good guy at the helm, Tommy Lloyd, and great stars on their team. So the future is bright for both men's and women's U of A basketball, and all of our athletic sports are moving in the positive direction. That's a great thing. And that's a good thing about Wonder, is we get to talk about the positive things that are happening. Our guest for this first segment of Wonder is Julie Miller. She is an associate professor of neuroscience and speech, language, and hearing sciences at the University of Arizona. Julie, before you say hello, I want to know how to say welcome in German.
That I don't know. I can say thank you in German, which is Dankeschön.
Okay. The reason I say that is because you are in Germany right now, and we are talking to you in Germany.
That's right. I'm on sabbatical research currently in Hanover, Germany.
That's amazing that we have you around the world, and you sound like you're sitting right next to across the table from me here. So thank you very much for coming on this morning and talking about your interesting research, which focuses on the link between vocal changes in songbirds, of all things, and age-related disorders in humans. And now the link between that is amazing. What motivated you to explore this connection between songbirds and in your study of speech, language, and hearing sciences, that link of what age-related disorders in humans might, what is the link there?
Well, it's a very interesting story that started some years ago, where my laboratory focuses on studying the brains and song behavior of zebra finches as a way to understand how speech is produced and factors that impact speech in us. And as we all know, and I'm particularly aware of this, being of middle age, as we age, our brains change. And these changes can affect a number of different systems. They affect our body systems. They affect our brain in different ways. We are very interested in how aging affects our ability to communicate, mm-hmm. right? This is a trait that's shared among us and many species, this capacity to communicate. And if we can't communicate well, whether it's in our social interactions, in our job, it severely impacts our quality of life. There's been a lot of research on how our learning and memory and even movement is affected with aging, but there's really been a gap in our understanding of how normal aging impacts our ability to communicate. And to really address, you know, your original question, as a faculty member here at the University of Arizona, I have a unique position in that I'm both a neuroscientist and I have a shared appointment with the Department of Speech, Language, and Hearing Sciences. And what that means is that I'm able to talk about my research with a community of individuals who study speech, language, and hearing processes in humans. And so just by having a spontaneous conversation one day with my colleague, Associate Professor Dr. Robin Samlin in the Department of Speech, Language, and Hearing, who studies aging voice in humans, we came to ask this question: do birds show changes in their song as they age? And so we began, go ahead.
No, that's you, go ahead.
Oh, that's me. Oh, okay. I thought I had heard somebody in the background. And so we started talking about this and asking if we could take measurements of birds as they age, from young adult to middle age to old age, and see changes in their song that were similar to what we see in aging human voice studies. And really from there, it really flowed nicely into asking, well, we see these changes in the bird's song as they age, and some of these changes are similar to what we see in aging human voices. We next wanted to ask the question, well, what about their brains? What is it about the changes in the brain that we can measure that really help to contribute, to drive to these changes in song?
Very interesting. And you know, a zebra finch is called a zebra finch probably because they look like a zebra. Their tail feathers have kind of the black and white pattern that you would see on a zebra. And so the zebra finch was called that because of that. But they are a social singer. They communicate with their song that they sing most of their life. But just like a human being, their voice or their bird song changes over time. And a human from a little kid, baby crying for the first time, and the little child voice all the way up to the deep resonating tones of middle age. And then into that later years, the voice does change. Even though it stays the same, it changes during that time. And so these birds also have the similar kind of brain activity that we have in humans, and that's why they were selected, mm-hmm. right?
That's right. They, their brains, both in terms of structures in their brain that are important for learning song and producing song, as well as how their brain structures are wired. So the activity of neurons in their brain are very similar to how our brains are structured and wired to learn how to speak and to maintain that speech over our whole lives.
And it is interesting, especially at the speech and hearing sciences, when aphasia happens. So say a good example would be, you know, say that there was a stroke and then a person goes into aphasia and they have to learn how to basically speak again as they come out of that stroke situation. It's interesting how the brain can accommodate that recurrence of speech, even though maybe there's some deterioration and based on the stroke or even age or whatever. It's amazing how powerful the brain is to kind of keep that speech alive.
That's right. And that's an important point, because while there are changes in our brain with aging that are not positive, our brains have such an amazing capacity for resilience. And we see this in the songbirds. Mm-hmm. So as these birds age, there's changes in their song, but their songs don't deteriorate. And even though, for example, in our study, we see genetic changes in the brain, these birds are still producing their song. They're still mating. And their singing is driving, singing. You think of singing, and we sing, and we do other forms of exercise. You know, singing is a form of vocal exercise. And so in these birds and in us, as we're exercising, we're stimulating growth, new brain growth, new neurons, new connections. And so the songbirds are a wonderful example of this, in that as they age, they still have plasticity in their brains, and they have these strategies to maintain resilience, which is something that we can really learn from. You know, how is a songbird's brain able to adapt to aging? And what does that mean for strategies that we could employ with our own aging brains?
We're talking with Dr. Julie Miller. She is an associate professor of neuroscience and speech and language and hearing sciences at the University of Arizona. I'm curious, do you have some zebra finches? Have you brought them into someone's house and talk to them for 20 years to figure out how their brain changes? How do you get this data on the zebra finch's mm-hmm. brain, and how do you access mm-hmm. that information to look into your study?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, so zebra finches, people have them as pets. Mm-hmm. We study them in the lab. There's hundreds of labs around the world that study songbirds. Now, zebra finches are one of the most popular songbird models, because people have been studying them since the 1950s, the 1960s, because zebra finches are really easy to breed, mm-hmm. in a domestic situation, in a lab. And so we have a colony of zebra finches at the university. They're very easy to breed. We are able to record and analyze their song. And then we're able to do, take tissue samples and really ask questions that you can't get at in humans. So we can ask about changes at the level of DNA, RNA, protein. We can make measurements, tissue measurements, and ask, how do these changes in the brain influence their song? We can also change a single gene in their brain and ask, how does that affect their song? And this is important because, just as an example, back when I was a postdoctoral fellow at UCLA in Los Angeles, we were studying a gene that in humans, when there's a mutation in this gene, it causes a speech and language disorder. And so a single change in a gene can affect your vocal communication in a big way. And so people in working with zebra finches and other songbird species are really able to ask questions about what's happening at a single gene level, or what's happening in terms of brain firing, and how that then maps on to the vocal production. And plus, they're really easy species to breed, which is important. And they're used to being handled.
Right.
So they're very social creatures as well. They live in colonies.
They're like us. They're like humans, right? Yeah, they're like us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. When we come back after the break, let's talk a little bit more about how this research may affect the research that's going on with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease and brain disorders in general. We're talking with Dr. Julie Miller, Associate Professor of Neuroscience at the University of Arizona. You're listening to Wonder, the wonderful things going on at the University of Arizona. And this is The Morning Voice. We'll be back after the break. Bringing us in, right? The zebra finches singing, bringing us back with some music. We love it. We're talking with Dr. Julie Miller from the University of Arizona, Associate Professor of Neuroscience and Speech and Language and Hearing Sciences, cross appointment there, talking about it's all gone to the birds. This conversation is just gone to the birds. So talking about how research on songbirds, specifically zebra finches, and how that their change in voice over their lifetime might be similar to what is happening and the research showing what's happening in a human's brain. So, Julie, let's talk a little bit about how this research in controlling birds' songs and what's happening for them and their genes and those expressions in their genes, how that might help disorders like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's, and how this research might play into trying to mitigate some of that those terrible diseases.
Absolutely. So let me just start and explain a little bit of background information on what we know about voice and speech changes in neurodegenerative diseases. And so in Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, other diseases, we know that there are early changes in our voice and speech. Now, typically in those diseases, the research and treatment focus has been on, in Parkinson's, on the movement symptoms, and in Alzheimer's, on learning and memory impairments. But we have a lot of really emerging research from human subject work and also from animal models, model the human condition, that really these early changes in voice and speech can happen years before we start to see the symptoms of which people get diagnosed. So for example, in Parkinson's disease, typically people will notice movement problems, tremor, problems walking. But what we know is that years before this, there are some changes in our voice. So people may have a soft, monotonous voice, changes in speaking rate. And so with these diseases, oftentimes, by the time they're diagnosed, there's not treatments that allow us to slow or halt the disease. And that's really been, a big gap in research, is that we really need to intervene early in these diseases and develop new treatments that can really modify, slow the disease in its tracks. So for that, our lab and others are really highlighting the importance of looking at vocal symptoms early. Now, in human subjects, we know that there are these changes, but it's hard to really understand how are these diseases impacting the biological mechanisms in the brain. What's happening at the level of the cell in terms of the genetic code, in terms of the protein that's being made early on, and how is it being disrupted early on in these diseases? And what does that mean for the vocal function? And so for this, we can employ laboratory animals like songbirds, where the brain circuitry for song that's so similar to our own circuitry for vocal production is really well characterized. And so what we're doing in songbirds, and people also use rodent species for this work, is we're truly trying to understand early consequences of diseases, whether it's Parkinson's or Alzheimer's, on the brain, and in terms of how it's impairing the vocal function. And the idea really is the long-term goal, and this is just not my lab, but many people working on this effort, is to develop new drugs to target these disease changes early in the brain by leveraging vocal behavior by leveraging this ability to look at early vocal changes and be able to uncover, okay, we have these early vocal changes. Now let's go look in the songbird brain or in the rodent brain and really get at what are the changes that are happening early in the disease that might offer strategies for us to develop new drugs, new ways to target the disease, slow it down, improve quality of life, not just for the vocal problems, but really for, you know, learning, memory, movement.
Which is, you know, is really important, especially if you're infirmed with Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or some degenerative disease of the brain. It's great to be able to get that marker earlier so that you can target it, so that you can mitigate some of those problems down the line. It's interesting that these zebra finches and older birds of all types can still produce song behavior, even though there might be a gene change within their system. And so that ability of the brain to continue to do what it needs to do, even though there's some gene modification or whatever's happening from age. This bodes well for people with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and other diseases, because it says that maybe there's some hope for this one, stopping it earlier, try to stop the progression. But two, it's just great that the brain can modify and we can teach people with aphasia and other people to continue to teach to speak even after they have had some catastrophic perhaps brain injury or something that would happen. So this is really important research, is it not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I want to highlight a point you brought up, and that is we do have behavioral strategies. So my colleagues here at the University of Arizona, around the world, who are speech language pathologists and audiologists, they work with individuals that have various disorders and diseases, and they offer behavioral treatment that's very effective. And I think, though, that oftentimes, though, individuals don't necessarily want to seek it out, right? And it can be cognitively challenging. And so I think it's really important to have other strategies besides behavior and harnessing tools for behavioral intervention, that it'd be great to have some pharmacological tools as well to really intervene early. And I think that songbirds offer these strategies because we know that because they're singing and they're vocalizing so much, that this is, you know, enabling the brain to be plastic and have release of certain growth factors and other things that could, you know, could offer these additional strategies.
Well, this is excellent research. Who would know that a little finch, a little songbird finch singing in the trees? So when you go out today and you're listening to the beautiful birds in the trees, think about the fact that some of them might be helping get some research done on what it's like to have human brain age and speech patterns over time, and how we can help with Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. So Dr. Julie Miller, we appreciate you being in here today, and keep us posted on what your next steps are for your research and how this all comes out. And obviously there's a lot more to be done, but great to hear your song this morning, as they say, as you I imagine after you get through here, you'll go on X and tweet about this. So that's a good thing too. So,
well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my research, and it's been a pleasure to be here today. Thank
Great.
You, Dr. Ackerman.
Enjoy your sabbatical in Germany. You're listening to Wonder, the great things happening at the U of A. This is The Morning Voice on KVOI. We'll be back after a word from our great sponsors. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. This is Wonder, where we talk about the wonderful things happening at the University of Arizona. Of course, we had the installment of President Garamella this past week, great ceremony down at Arizona Centennial Hall, and a very formal event, but very important for the progression of leadership at the University of Arizona. Also had the great Sweet 16 game last night between the University of Arizona and Duke, and although the outcome wasn't what we hoped for, what a great game and great athletes on that team, as well as many of the all the athletes on all of our 22 sports at the University of Arizona. Very amazing, great entertainment. It's the only game in town, as they say, in Tucson. It's one of the reasons lots of us love Tucson is the Wildcats. Coming up on Monday, our good friend Lydia Aranda will have Rainmakers. On Tuesday, General Ted Maxwell will be in with Engagement Hour. On Wednesday, our good friend Alan Kaith will sit in for Grant Kruger and talk about food for thought. And we've got a couple of interesting guests for him on Wednesday. And Thursday, Tom Moulton will be here with Southern Arizona Attractions. And then we'll be back a week from today with business success stories and wonder at the University of Arizona. Part of the cool things that the U of A does is it interacts with the community and provides so many different resources. I was with a couple of medical salespeople yesterday who were at Banner, and Banner University Hospital and the medical school obviously has a huge impact on our community. The aerospace, astronomy, we just were talking to someone about speech and hearing sciences, and there's just so many ways that the U of A affects our community. And one way we do that is we have a world-class library at the University of Arizona. It's an amazing institution, been around for a long time. And we have an associate librarian and digital preservation unit lead, Stacy Erdman, with us this morning. Good morning, Stacy.
Good morning.
You work at a fantastic place. The library is an amazing facility, and people might think books on shelves, but it's so much more than that, isn't it?
Yes, we have quite a diverse collection, including many digital collections that people don't know about, probably.
Right. I do the special collections thing in my class. I donated my dissertation to the special collections, and I put a $50 bill in it and then stuck it up on the shelf. And I tell my students it's the $50 bill test to see if anybody will ever check out your book and go back a year later and it's still there. I wrote that thing 20 years ago, and that $50 bill still sits in in the thing. No one wants to check out my book. My book is nothing. But what we might want to do, though, is think about memories. And you have an interesting project that you are working on, which is just I just think is so welcome, especially to members of the Tucson community. In the Wildcats Memory Lab, you have a unique way to have people preserve their memories and digitize them for the future. So explain a little bit about what you're working on.
Yeah, so the Wildcats Memory Lab is a fun, do-it-yourself, self-service digitization lab that is open to members of the university community, so faculty and staff and students, but also the greater Tucson community. And so what the lab has, we have a variety of computer workstations that are outfitted with digitization equipment, so we can accommodate a number of different formats. But the purpose is really to urge people to, look into your closet. Do you have boxes of old things that are just languishing, things that you might want to pass on to your kids, things that family members might want to share with one another, because files on old formats will degrade over time or become totally inaccessible. Part of it is due to just technical obsolescence in general, like with computers, different kinds of formats, but also the media itself. So a lot of people have things on formats that are, it's really hard to even obtain like the players, right?
Like a beta
exactly.
Video player kind of a thing, yeah.
Yeah, and so we get people coming to us like, oh, I've had this box of things I inherited and I have no way to open them, and even I don't even know what's on this tape.
Yeah, they bought a camera and it has a specific size cartridge in it that and there's no way to play it on a machine in their house or anywhere, but they have it. They don't know what's on it, but they...
Exactly.
How do I get this off here and see what's Johnny's first grade graduation? How do I see this?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so there are all these, like, precious memories that are just kind of locked in these obsolete formats, and so...
But even the more obvious, like you say, a box full of photos. You got a box full of photos, and they don't seem to have any rhyme or reason to them, but they're important, and you guess you could spend a day or two or three going through them and looking at them, but how do you put them in a format that makes it easy to share?
Exactly.
And preserve.
And preserve for the future.
Right.
A lot of people have... memories, you know, locked in their mind that are associated with these items. So we try to encourage people to not only, you know, come in and digitize things, but also to document, you know, the people in the photos and what they're doing and where they are, that kind of thing.
We're talking with Stacy Erdman, who is an associate librarian and the digital preservation lead for the Wildcats Memory Lab, a great project to take your own personal photos and memories and videos and all sorts of different things, different formats, and put them into a digitized format so that they can be preserved for the future. Now, that is intimidating. That's really intimidating to say, I got to bring down this box of tapes. I got to bring down this box of photos. I got to sit in my own self-paced little cubicle and work on these computers and do this myself. I know nothing about that. I have no ideas of how I'm going to get these photos onto a digital jump drive and so forth. How do I do this? Don't be intimidated, right?
That is definitely my main takeaway. We want to empower people, because you can do this work. And the lab is just kind of giving you those tools. We're giving you step-by-step directions. We have like printed tutorials that walk you through the process of doing all of the different formats that the lab can accommodate. We do offer, like myself or my staff can do orientations one-on-one with people if you're really intimidated and you're like, I just need someone to hold my hand for a little bit. Like, we're happy to do that to kind of get you used to things. But
and another way is bring your grandson, granddaughter along with you to help you. Bring a U of A student along who's a digital native that knows how to do this. But it's not that intimidating once you are told, put this picture here, push this button, and it appears on your computer, and then let's just put those in the file and we'll go on to the next one. Once you learn how to do it, it's not that hard. But
But
the intimidation factor is, oh, I don't know anything about that. I don't want to do that because I don't know.
Well, absolutely.
It's easy to learn, right?
Yeah. I think we've set up most of our workstations to be pretty easy for people to learn. And really, I think sitting down with someone for like 5 minutes, I could show you like, this is the basic, here's what you do. And like you said, a lot of it is just, once you do it once, you get the hang of it. And it's really not that hard.
Like if you had, in our case, our family is having a reunion this May, and you know, my mother was diligent about putting together dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of photograph books. There's just shelves full of them. And, you know, you look at them and you say, okay, who's taking these? What do we do with these? Who are these people in these pictures? Mm-hmm. If you could put them on a digital format and share them with extended family, it would be nice. But that does take time.
It does.
So you have to devote the time and you have to want to have the drive to do this, because it's easier just to keep them in a big box in the closet.
Yes.
If you're interested in memories, preserving memories, it's an important thing. So there's some examples of this in other libraries, but this is kind of the first at a major institution, right?
Yeah. So the Memory Lab as a concept was really developed by some individuals at the Washington, D.C. Public Library back in 2015, and they received funding from the Institute of Museum and Library Services, which is an independent federal agency, to begin a memory lab at their institution. And it was just so successful for them, and the word got out in the library and archives world, and people were like, wow, I want to build one for my community.
Right.
And they were able to create the Memory Lab Network, which was a project to help kind of distribute memory labs across the country. And most of those have been located at public libraries. There are some in tribal libraries as well. But I believe I've looked all over, and I don't think there is another memory lab at a university. So I believe we're the first to try it in a university setting.
This is exciting and excellent, and a great way demonstrates how the University of Arizona gives back to the community as our land-grant university and so forth. What a great way to give the community a way to engage with the university. And that's important as we look at the investment that the community makes in the university. It's great that the community gets something back and and preserving memories is one of those. We're talking with Stacy Erdman, Associate Librarian and Digital Preservation Unit Lead at the University of Arizona Libraries, about the Wildcats Memory Lab. My name is Dr. Ed Ackerley. Morgan Murphy is with me. We'll be back after the break with a little bit more on wonder at the university. Digital Preservation Unit Lead at the University of Arizona Libraries, the Wildcats Memory Lab, taking memories and preserving them for the future. Just in general, Stacy, what a great concept to kind of, preserve people's memories and keep them active for years to come. And, you know, I know my folks would talk about their parents and their grandparents in a very fond way, and it had been, you know, we had some old photographs, but they were pretty tough, you know, kind of broken up and kind of hard to see. So it'd be nice to be able to kind of take a look at something that's in a more friendly format, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I think, you know, the service we provide there, it helps make those memories accessible to successive generations.
Right. And the other thing that is neat about having your, say, your family photos put on digital, then you can share them easily with extended family and others that might be interested in seeing some of that. You know, we all laugh about having to go to Morgan's house on the weekend and look at her trip to Boston slides, and we'll have her walk us through, well, we went to this restaurant, then we, this is the food we had, and then we went to this store, and then we went to this thing. And that can be kind of tedious for people that aren't in it. But if it's your family and it's your memories and it's your background, it's a powerful thing, and it's kind of neat to share with grandkids and so forth. This is who we are, and this is where we came from.
Absolutely. Yeah, we had I met with a man yesterday to help him get started on digitizing some VHS tapes, and he was telling me about them, and I was really touched that he was digitizing like a retirement party for right. someone he had worked with, a friend, and he had passed away, I think about 5 years ago. But he was digitizing it for this man's wife and his children. And he's like, oh, the children have never seen this before. And he was just really choked up. Like, you know, being able to share that with people, like, I think that's why we do it, definitely.
Memories evoke emotion, and that's an important thing, and that's really cool.
Yeah.
You know, I talked about intimidation, that don't be intimidated, because you can learn how to do this easily no matter what your age is or your technical skill or ability. And we'd also encourage you to bring a friend and have two people working on it, so that you can sit in the booth and have someone that's... likes to do this kind of stuff to help you with it. But once you learn how to do it, it's pretty easy. But the big question is I'm just a member in the community. I'm a Tucsonan. I live in Green Valley. I don't have a library card. How can I get into the University of Arizona? How do I get on campus? And how do I get into the University of Arizona library? Do I need a card, or how do I get in? I don't understand. How do I do that? Can you tell me how to do that?
Yeah. So actually, you do not need a library card to access the Memory Lab. Which is, you know, people are always surprised, like, this is free to me. Like, I'm not affiliated with the university, but it's totally open to the public. The library also has a makerspace called Catalyst Studios, which is also open to the public. So we do have other, you know, resources that are totally available to people without, you know, needing to have a card
right.
to access them. But we are in room B302 of the main library, which you come in to the library, you're on the second floor,
mm-hmm.
And then you would go up a floor. You would kind of make a right after you get off of the elevator and make another right, and you'll see the lab right there.
Mm-hmm.
But getting to the library itself, the address for the library, I do have it right here, 1510 East University Boulevard,
mm-hmm.
And it's right by the football stadium,
right.
if you're familiar with that. So there's a parking lot right across the street, the Cherry Avenue Garage,
right.
So you can just park there and walk across the street and mm-hmm. come on in.
And there's plenty of handicapped parking, too, right there, too. So
yeah.
if you're an older person and you have a handicap, need some privileges there,
yes.
you can... anybody that has a University of Arizona space in a garage, if they display their state of Arizona handicap pass in a garage, not on the street necessarily where the handicap places are, but if you have a handicap placard, you can use that in the garages and park in the handicap, which are very convenient, and they're right there on the bottom floor. So you just walk right across the street, and boom,
yeah.
you're at the library. So
yeah.
And so it's very, very convenient. And this is really important stuff because we're preserving memories and we're preserving emotion and creating emotion. And who doesn't want to tell the future generations how we lived and who we interacted with
exactly.
and what the celebrations were?
Yes.
And that's really powerful. And so this is open 24 hours a day, but any time the library is open, it's open. But you got to make a reservation, right?
Right. So it is open when the public access hours to the library, which right now is 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. on weekdays, and it's a little bit different on the weekend. But all you need to do is go to, we have like a little webpage on the library's webpage. So I don't want to read out the whole address, but if you just go to a Google or the search engine that you use and just type in Wildcats Memory Lab, it'll be the first thing that comes up.
Great.
And then, yes, you can book a time and you can kind of pick how long you want it to be, depending on how long you think you want to stay.
And I would suggest, giving it a try, digitize something, and then if it works, come bring back some more things. And then over time, you can do what a great gift to your family and to your children and to your grandchildren to digitize your beautiful memories. Stacy Erdman, Associate Librarian, Digital Preservation Unit Lead at the University of Arizona Libraries and the Wildcats Memory Lab. Restoring the history of our lives into the future. So thank you so much for being with us this morning. Thank you all for joining us on The Morning Voice. And we'll be back next Friday with a little bit of success and a lot of wonder on The Morning Voice on KVOI. Make it a great week.